Yeah, no surprise. The phones are filling up fast for J. Michael Straczynski becoming Superman. And we'll get a line for you. These are Babylon 5 fans, but also people who are kind of touched by his story, one of overcoming a difficult childhood from poverty to Hollywood, but it was the way he did it with such grace and intuition that there was something better. A lot of other people would have become subsumed by the abuse, might have replicated it in their lives, might have, as his father had, the victim of abuse became an abuser, and something more. I mean, started off as a Nazi, as a, he was a child Nazi, working with the actual SS. Committing horrible, unspeakable acts against powerless people during World War II, comes to the United States and continues as a bully, as an abuser, both inside the house and out. That makes the surprise ending of the book even more extraordinary, and I won't give that away, but it's true, which is why it says, you know, he had stops along the way at murder, madness, mayhem, movie stars, cults, slums, and sociopaths. Oh, and war crimes. I'm giving away a little bit of the ending there, but you'll get the idea and you'll hang on for him. We'll get a line for you next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I had to go find the page, Joe, because I just wanted to make sure that I'd flesh that out properly. What your dad tore up when you were
Oh,
failing
yeah.
school, when you were failing school because they never took you to an optometrist. And you were nearsighted and you couldn't see the blackboard. And so you weren't doing well because you needed glasses. So he tore up the full runs of the Amazing Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, the Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, Flash, Green Lantern, and Superman. Tore them all into confetti. And what do you estimate the value of those comics would be today?
Oh, well over $100,000, if not a lot more than that. And parenthetical, I had a revelation a moment ago.
Tell me.
Yeah, as we've done the evening together, you and I having our conversation, there have been bumpers of songs about Superman or where Superman appears.
Yes.
And you mentioned the universality of the Superman character. I can't remember the last time I heard a song about the Flash
No.
or Green Lantern or Captain America. But time after time, that
Right.
symbol appears in songs. You know, it
You
just
know,
speaks to the universality of the character.
in Sunshine Superman by Donovan, the only two characters he mentions are Superman and Green Lantern. And I think I always thought that was kind of weird because, like, Green Lantern is nothing compared to, I mean, not to my mind anyway. So that's the only two that he puts in the lyric. I didn't play that bumper tonight, but he refers to Sunshine Superman and Green Lantern. And I'm like, okay.
Well, he was being kind to Green Lantern. He
I
was
think
being kind to
so.
those characters
It's
along
an elevation. But you were saying, and
that.
we've got the phones and people are calling and it's wonderful. But let me just so finish that thought though, because your father said, you know, you're never going to make a living off this crap, and you do. And so you were given some very specific honors within the comic book universe, such as when DC called, and then we got to the top of the hour.
Yeah, and they said, we want to reinvent Superman for a new generation. So there I am, having grown up sort of imprinting on Superman, then turning around to say, okay, if I was making Superman now, how would that be? And then the chance to go full circle on that was just phenomenal. It felt like, and best of all, 2 days ago, I was in Chicago at the American Writers Museum, and they had Jerry Siegel's typewriter there. And I got to type on Jerry Siegel's typewriter. And the linkage, the cycle of life is now closed.
Oh yeah. That's amazing. Typewriters are very tactile, you know, in a way that laptops aren't, because you have to. And you were talking about one of your typewriters where you were literally like pounding the key to get it to go up these old good.
Yeah.
There's something about it's so percussive. It's so much more like playing an instrument almost,
Well,
and
it's
that's,
visceral.
yeah, it'd be like playing B.B. King's guitar or something, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Steve in North Carolina on a wild card line for J. Michael Straczynski on Coast to Coast AM. Steve?
thank you, sir. And sir, I hope that you will let me go back to your childhood, because that struck a chord with me when you was talking about the things that your dad did that you did the opposite of to try to get away from his influence. Now, what I did was the very same thing. My dad's different now. He was a church boy. He was a deacon in the church, but when he came home, he was the devil.
Yeah.
And the one memory I got is he had beat me up one night, and then the next day was Sunday morning, and we had to go to church. And my eye was black, and he was putting this, I was a little tiny boy, but I still remember it like it was yesterday. He was putting this Vitalis in my head.
Yeah.
And talking to me the whole time, and he said, "Now, when we go to church today, you, if anybody asks you about your eye being black, you fell down."
Right.
"And if you tell anybody any different, it's gonna be worse than what you got the first time."
Sure.
It's so important to guys like this to maintain the appearance of normalcy, that they are a good father. So they teach you to lie and to, yeah, you know, to cover up this stuff. It's all about their personal appearance. One thing that I've noticed, this goes back to you're talking about this now yourself. There's been a lot of coverage of the biography coming out in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Entertainment Weekly, Washington Post, and then lots and lots of reviews. And I've heard privately from a lot of the reporters who have covered the book, as yourself, who said there's lots of books about, you know, father-daughter issues and mother-daughter, mother-son, but not a lot about father-son problems. You always taught, as you were taught, to say, no, everything's fine, everything's good, no problem. You taught me, you know, softball and fishing. And like to tell the truth about dad is like the last taboo.
Yeah.
And I think that the conversation we're having now, and that you share in as well, I think it's an important conversation to have, and the more that we can loosen up that taboo and just talk about the reality of it, the good and the bad of it, maybe it might help other people in the future from not having to deal with what you had to deal with.
It's and you're very brave in that way. The same way I mentioned last night with Diane Lake, who was a snake in the Manson family, she even, by the way, gets a portrayal in the new Quentin Tarantino movie. They have a woman playing her. And I think it's kind of the same. It's just this moment of bravery. I mean, the things she admits to doing in the book are just so horrendous, but we're only as sick as our secrets. And if you can get them out in the open, you know, they crumble like a vampire at dawn, I think, or at least they start to. It may take a while. Brent is in Sherman Oaks on Coast to Coast AM for J. Michael Straczynski. Go ahead, Brent.
Hey, can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, great. So I'm a writer myself. I live in Los Angeles. And about 10 years ago or so, I sold a major script to Warner Brothers. It was a DC property, a name you would instantly recognize, and it didn't get made. And we actually got a lot of activity around then. We got a great agent and, you know, almost got another movie made that came within a hair's breadth, and it kind of fell apart at the last second. And then the economy crashed and we couldn't get work. My writing partner, I couldn't get work. I ended up going into corporate finance, which is kind of where I am now. And I've kind of been feeling sorry for myself because I also do some other things, and I don't really have any time to write anymore. And I've just been feeling sorry for myself. And the conversation tonight has really been inspiring to me. And I just wanted to thank you for it. And I just bought the audio version of Becoming Superman because I don't have time to actually read books. So if I get a book, it has to be the audio book. But I wanted just to thank you for your story and tell you that you've been very inspiring to me tonight.
Well, thank you. And I do hope you find time to continue with the writing. There's always someone to say, you know, there isn't time for it, or you make the time for it, either get up early or stay up late. The problem is we fall asleep on our own lives when you're working in finance or working at a corporation, and you fall asleep in your own life until something happens to wake you up. It's a death, it's a diagnosis, and suddenly for the first time you're actually awake, and you can look at your life and say, is this what I really want to be doing? Mm-hmm. And if your heart says, I want to write, make the time. Even if it's only 10 pages a week or one page a day, you write one page a day, that's two screenplays in a year. That's most of a book. And don't lose anything that makes you passionate and happy. You know, as kids, we all, you know, spontaneously sing, dance, tell stories, tell someone else, as an adult, says, don't do that, you're embarrassing yourself, let someone else do that. And we unlearn our passions, and corporate life can easily make you unlearn your passions as well as anything else. And hold on to that, because you don't want to hit age 80 and look back at your life as a catalog of missed opportunities. Keep fighting.
Thank you. That's the conversation I've been having in my head, and I really appreciate your words. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Nancy is in Victorville, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Nancy?
Hi.
Howdy.
Hi. I'm so excited to talk to you, both of you.
that won't last.
I'm a big fan of Coast to Coast and you, Ian. And my favorite all-time science fiction show was Babylon 5, and I've watched them all. I'm a big sci-fi fan. I always have been. But I have this question about this one character. I think it was Vorlon or some. He was like a robot, but actually he was quite sentient. He had a personality, but he had to wear this metal covering because he had to breathe a certain atmosphere in order to be on the station there. Do you recognize that character that I'm describing?
Yes, that was Kosh. And I wanted to play with the notion that, you know, not everyone comes from the same kind of environment that we come from. Not everyone comes from a oxygen-breathing environment. And in the case of Kosh, they had been meddling genetically with our past and lots of other species and lots of other worlds and other solar systems to sort of terraform our personalities and our dreams. And when they are revealed, everyone sees them differently as something from their own. We see them as angelic beings, others seeing them as different kinds of entities. So he had to hide inside of this encounter suit that would allow him to interact with us without tipping off who he really was.
There you go. Eric has a favorite character, or maybe I'm putting words in his mouth. In Austin on Coast to Coast AM, east of the Rockies, for J. Michael Straczynski. Eric?
Yes, Ian, thank you for taking my call. J. Michael, thank you so much for all your artwork and your inspiration, man. It is totally awesome what you do. I've got a couple of questions, actually, that kind of relate to each other. And one is, first of all, I love the villains that you put into Babylon 5, specifically Mr. Morden and Mr. Bester. And they are so dimensional in the fact that it just makes you love them because of the fact that it reflects the shadow side of yourself. And what I wanted to know is that, do those characters kind of come from the shadow side of your life? Did you kind of use them as kind of a therapy or at least kind of a cathartic tool to work through some of those shadows that you went through?
Not necessarily. I mean, I always try to make the characters their own thing without necessarily being a reflection of my own personal past. But that being said, the characters you single out, the reason that so many of our antagonists on Babylon 5 work well is a technique that I use called turning your hat around. So I'll write a script. We have the bad guy, Mr. Bester or someone else. And then when I get done with it, I go back to the beginning and I write this. Okay, let's say just for a moment that in this version of the show, Bester's the good guy. He's the hero of the show. and everyone else is being annoying. And how would I write his character differently knowing that? And because we're all the heroes of our own narratives. The monster never sees a monster in the mirror. So by virtue of turning my hat around, I could then make him more 3D. In fact, what we had, actually had one episode which was done entirely from the Psi-Corp point of view, as if they were the heroes. We changed the opening sequence, we changed the logo, and showed it, that he's the good guy and the guys in Babylon 5 are being these annoying people. So I think it's important, whenever you're creating an antagonist, to infuse them with, you know, a round, well-rounded personality, not just be a mustache-twirling bad guy.
You had another quick question, Eric?
Yeah, the second question that I have is as regards to the rise of Night Watch in Babylon 5. And looking at the current headlines with the extremist groups like Antifa, Proud Boys, and so forth and so on, did you kind of see that as being something that that was kind of rising 20 years ago when you wrote Babylon 5? And how do you feel about that kind of being reflected as far as kind of, I would say, I guess, retrocausality, as it were? Do you kind of feel like a prophet? And how does that make you feel kind of seeing those sort of organizations rise in the headlines today?
Thanks, Eric.
Well, I kind of saw Babylon 5 as a TV show, not a user's manual, unfortunately, so it seems to have gone the other way. It's always strange when you see your work reflected in the real world, and you wonder about how far this goes. During the production of Babylon 5, Bruce Boxleitner was in the White House with Melissa Gilbert, who was then the president of SAG, Screen Actors Guild, to do a conference on employment. And in the course of the meeting, Karl Rove, who was well known as George Bush Jr.'s brain, comes rushing into the room, goes past Melissa to Bruce, and shakes his hand. I want to tell you that Babylon 5 is the best science fiction show ever, and the president feels the same way. And I'm still not sure what I make of that.
It's so interesting. Yeah. I could see where that, especially with President Bush, I guess I never really thought of him as sort of a sci-fi guy. So maybe that's why that's kind of a weird thought. Wild card line, Bob is in Big Rapids, Michigan on Coast to Coast AM. Bob?
Hi. My all-time favorite movie is 1956, Forbidden Planet. Now, Michael supposedly has had that project to do a remake. I wondered what the status was on that.
Joe, what's the story?
Which movie?
Forbidden Planet.
Oh, yeah. I did a draft or two on that, worked with Jim Cameron to try and get it done. It fell between the cracks of Warner Brothers. It is still sitting on a shelf. It's one of the best things that I've ever written, and I hope that someday someone will figure out, you know, how to make that thing.
Cool. A good friend of Jim Cameron's is a good friend of mine, good friend of the show, actually, a guy named Charles Pellegrino. And he actually, you mentioned earlier, you wish you had met Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov. Those were his mentors. He got to have those as his personal mentors and has the a long history of correspondence between them. And I thought that was pretty cool. He was also the guy who invented the Jurassic Park recipe of the blood sucking insect trapped in amber. That was Pellegrino's.
Oh, yeah. I should mention, by the way, that Jim Cameron once said the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about writing science fiction.
He said?
I think that was about writing familiar characters in unfamiliar settings. It took me 10 years to realize that was wrong. It's familiar relationships in unfamiliar settings. Aliens is a mother-daughter relationship, even though it's not. Terminator 2 is a father-son relationship, even though it's not. Because you may not be able to buy into robots or space travel or aliens, but you can buy into that relationship.
Very interesting. We'll come back. We got 1.5 hour left. We'll get all the calls on that are up on the screen. Stand by for more from J. Michael Straczynski on Coast to Coast AM. Yep. Book is called Becoming Superman, My Journey from Poverty to Hollywood, and we're lining up the last couple of callers for J. Michael Straczynski. I know that several people out there are Babylon 5 fans. I've already heard from many of them on Twitter. If you want to join in there, it's at Deacon Punnett. Always glad to hear from you. And we still do have an ongoing investigation both in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio, where there seems to be as many as 10 people dead with another shooting situation that developed overnight. I know I speak for Joe when I say that, you know, our hearts are with people who are always in pain. And so much of what his work has been about is about finding justice. And it's too early in the story arc for both of those events to know much. But if you are a sci-fi fan, then you know that what Joe said at the very beginning is very key. Sci-fi is a way of giving us hope. And I hope as we're heading into Sunday here in every time zone that you'll take a moment perhaps to reflect on our need for hope and for joining together at a time when other people will be more than happy to pull us apart. There's a lot of ugliness out there in the world. A lot of it is on the internet, and people are always trying to bait you into arguments and whatever. Just stand your ground and work toward good, and don't give up, please. So we'll get your calls, your questions, your comments for J. Michael Straczynski before the top of the hour. Grab an open line. We'll clear one out for you next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we have a lot of people hanging on for J. Michael Straczynski, perhaps best known for Babylon 5, but if you ever want a measure of just what an impact he made, I think it's fair to point out that the introduction for the book was written by Neil Gaiman. That's always cool. When Neil Gaiman's writing your introduction on your book, you know you've done something, I think, in your life. And I know you all have worked together, too, which is even cooler. Anna in did we leave anything off before the bottom of the hour? I don't think we did we?
No, we're good.
Okay, good. Anna in Mesa, Arizona on Coast to Coast for J. Michael Straczynski. Go ahead, Anna.
Good morning, J. Michael. You know, and again, to the shootings, my heart goes out to the shootings and the, you know, families and stuff. But I like how you... You said you never know who has the right idea, and lots of people never know that they are the ones that have the right idea. And just thanks for all the stories and stuff. But my question was for Babylon 5. I can't remember why does Minibar sleep diagonally in that, and I was like, oh, this is the perfect time. Just give them a call and find out.
Well, the Minbari, where I got that from, I was in England. I was touring Stratford-upon-Avon, I went to Shakespeare's old home. And what they did was that they would stack up the pillow. The beds were very short. The reason for which was they would stack up pillows at the headboard and people would sleep sitting up because it was considered bad luck to sleep lying flat because that was how you were put out when you were dead. So the idea of a bed that rose upward as part of like a good luck thing became part of what the Minbari believed in. I found in the past that whatever you can take something that we do ourselves and turn it just 10 degrees to one side, it becomes very alien suddenly. So that's where that came from.
Yeah, cool. Love that. And Ryan is in Phoenix on Coast to Coast, a fan of J. Michael Straczynski.
Yeah. I wondered what you thought of the Comiscape movement. I also wanted to know if you had any upcoming projects. Like, I would love to see another series like Synth8, but with like Rising Stars or Midnight Nation. And then I also wondered if you had any upcoming book tours or conventions planned.
Wow. Comicsgate is an hour and a half long conversation. Things that are currently in the works. I just sold a novel to Simon & Schuster. It'll be coming out in the spring. Mainstream, I'm writing a pilot for the USA Network. I'm writing for a new comic book company called Artists, Writers, and Artisans, started by Bill Hemas and Axel Alonso, who were the publisher and editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics for many years. And so the writing never stops. It just keeps going on. And I'm doing an appearance this week, starting this Thursday in Connecticut. I'll also be doing the Politics and Prose bookstore in Washington, D.C. The few days later. Also the Cartoon Art Museum and New York Comic Con and one or two other conventions. My Facebook page has all the dates.
Well, that's totally cool. All right. But what was the other one then? Was Sense8 coming back? We barely talked about it on Netflix, but it was a great series.
Oh, he was asking about anything else like Sense8 in the works.
And, right.
So nothing like that. I don't tend to walk in the same stream twice.
but the show I'm developing for USA Network, I think, could be very cool. And it's a modern, contemporary fantasy thing, which I'm working on with a very well-known fantasy writer. So that could be a lot of fun.
Very cool. Thank you, Ryan. Do you know my friend David Mack?
I know the name.
Yeah, Kabuki. And he works. Yeah. He also works with Neil Gaiman. He did the Sandman stuff. Sheila is in Springfield on Coast to Coast AM, and she was an early fan of J. Michael Straczynski. Sheila?
Yes, hi there. I just want to let you know, J. Mike Straczynski. By the way, someone told me you're supposed to be called Joe. Someone else told me you're supposed to be called Mike. But anyway, I just want to let you know,
fine.
I have your book on my lap. It's called The Complete Book of Script Writing. You wrote this, 30 years ago, I think, and it's still like one of the number one go-to books in screenwriting courses. It really helped me a lot in my screenwriting efforts, and I regrettably had to get out of screenwriting. I had to take care of my mom when she got very sick, but as far as how far I actually got in that really long climb to becoming a successful scriptwriter, which I did not, I got to the point where I was able to successfully query screenplays, send them into the studios, and then they actually got back to me. It was always a pass, but they always said, we have to pass on the screenplay, but do you have anything else? Which means they couldn't produce that particular screenplay, but they liked my style. They liked what I had to offer. So that's only as far as I got. This book is just a best read. And Ian, if you pick up this book, just the first chapter, I think Ian would really, really entertain you a lot. And my one final gushing moment of a gushing fan is one of the principles in screenwriting as far as how to make it well that you drove home was you have to write the first 10 pages of your screenplay must be absolutely killer. And in this book, you give us a sample of your first 10 of a screenplay called The Strange Case of Christine Collins, which, of course, was turned into that magnificent film called Changeling starring Angelina Jolie. And that was a killer, killer first 10. It had left you hanging and wanted more, which is exactly what the first 10 of a screenplay should be. If anybody in the audience wants to think about becoming a screenwriter, buy this book. So there, that's a free ad for you.
There you go.
Thank you so much for this book.
Thank you, Sheila.
Yeah, that was written during a time when I was trying to figure out how to write Changeling, and I couldn't make it work. And I thought, well, I had the first 10 pages. I'm going to put it in this writing book.
You know, I sold a screenplay of sorts earlier. I've been writing for the last year or so. I've been writing a fiction podcast, which has been very fun with somebody. I haven't sold any, but they're great. It's a great time. But I did. I sold a sketch to Bozo Circus when I was like 20 years old.
Oh man.
I sold a sketch about Golly the Gorilla, and they paid $50 for it. And they actually aired it. I never saw it, but somebody in the dorm, I wrote it when I was in college, and somebody in the dorm saw it and said, hey, did your sketch have a gorilla with banana? You know, I was like, yes. And they're like, it just ran. I always missed it. Tim is in St. Louis on Coast to Coast AM for J. Michael Straczynski of Babylon 5 and more. Tim?
Yeah, Joe, are there any plans to do anything in the future with the Babylon 5 universe, like with Crusade or Legend of the Rangers or anything like that?
No, Warner Brothers is sitting on the rights. They've said that, you know, they don't want to do anything with Babylon 5. They have a personal animus against the show.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do. Yep. Which is why it took us years to just pry out the show enough to put it on Amazon. They don't like any of the P10 shows that were done. And they said that this is one person in particular, Warner Brothers, who simply will not let anything be done with it. So we're hoping that eventually he will retire and we can have a shot at it.
Very interesting. Thank you. West of the Rockies, Andre is in Seattle on Coast to Coast. Andre?
Hey. It's first time being on Coast to Coast. Kind of surreal. Jay, huge fan of yours. I just binged all of Babylon 5. I myself actually work in the film industry, but mostly in the indie film side of things.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. I was kind of curious, Jay, I had a film produced a couple years ago called Beta Test, just, indie thing, but I had a few name talent in it. I was kind of curious where I should go from there. I've never tried to get an agent or anything like that, and I've written a lot of sci-fi over the last couple years.
Well, I think you answered your own question. If you have something that was produced earlier, that's your calling card, then you should definitely go out and get an agent. The best way of doing that is you write another couple of specs, hopefully in different genres. Pick a series right now. Do a spec script for that because you have to work your way up. But, yeah, at this stage where you are right now, the logical step is to go out and get an agent. I wish I could be more creative than that, but that's the truth of it.
Yeah, and it's that weird thing where you can't get an agent unless you've done something, and you can't do something unless you have an agent, which is always, you know, again, it speaks to the way in which you did it was pretty genius. You were able to break through without an agent, and then you got an agent that specialized in doing representing animation writers. But then even there, you sort of parlayed that into eventually doing the live action stuff that you were a part of. It's just like you did everything right, even if it didn't always work out right, or at least so it seems. Do you have a lot of regrets? Do you have any?
That's another 3-hour long conversation. What I will say though, in terms of the agent thing, and here's the encouraging, but good news is, you know, whenever an agent adds a client, eventually that client, if they're doing well, they outgrow the agency and they move up to somewhere else. That agent has to go out and find someone new. There's every year about, you know, 200 or 300, give or take, new writers sell for the first time and join the Writers Guild. And every year, new clients are picked up by agents. That they have to, because if they don't pick up new clients, they're going to have nobody. So it does happen. They do make first sales. Agents do take on new clients. It's a struggle. It's a pain in the butt, but it does happen.
It does. And it all comes down to being persistent and ultimately for being talented, which kind of I circle back to Norman Corwin, who recognized early on and saved you from, I mean, it was even like as close to, because of how you manipulated the system at San Diego State, how you manipulated their computer system in order to get into his class, it was kind of a choice between you being kicked out of the school or you getting into his class because he liked the material that you had to present him, to get permission from the instructor to be able to take the class. And he read your material and he liked it enough that he overrid the decision, which was to throw you out. I mean, it comes down to these make or break moments that you have all the time where you take a stand and you roll the dice big. And it sort of reminds me of what people say about, show me somebody who said they've never gotten a break and I'll show you somebody who's never taken a chance.
Yeah, well, the only benefits that I can think of to constantly moving around when I was a kid and losing everything I ever owned as was tossed off by the side of the road is that I realized I didn't have anything to lose after a while. And there's a point where you start to become, you know, relatively fearless. And you realize there's nothing they can do to you. You know, they can't kill you. They can't eat you. They can't put you in TV jail. Why not take a chance? Particularly once I got to know Harlan Ellison much later on, there's a saying that the more time you spend hanging out with lions, the less improbable becomes the idea of roaring. And I've met a lot of people in my life who were lions, and from them I learned to roar and to take chances because, honestly, what's the worst that can happen? They throw me out of the university, okay, I can accept that, but they didn't. And right. I had a hunch that Norman would be able to appreciate what brought me there was important enough for me to break into the telecommunications and film office, steal the computer control cards, and get into his class. And that says this guy wants to be a writer for real.
Yeah, but the key word there is hunch. You know?
Yeah.
It's a hunch. And we sort of
prepared mind.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of people, they have, even like I look at it somewhat divinely, right? And I think that there's like this, I feel this still small voice that says, do this. And our rational parts of our brain go, no, that'll never work, or that's dumb, or they'll think I'm an idiot or whatever. And then, you know, but that's my job every day, is to sort of just go with that feeling and to not fall victim to all of that self-doubt. And
well,
I think that's where
there's a notion that people are afraid of failure. As a culture, nothing is worse to us than failure. But the reality is, failure is an important part of the process. The military says, if you don't fail once in a while, you're not doing it right. In trying to get over the wall, you fail, you learn where you went wrong, you deal with the next time. And then you have to be willing, as you were just saying, to take a chance and fail. And if you fail, you get up, you try it again, do it in a different way. You have to embrace your inner failure and be willing to do that.
Yes. And I track with that. But there's some point where you say, well, you know, you got to make your own luck. In a lot of ways, and I say this with a smile, you kind of make your own failure. I mean, you walked away from things that were successful, that, and you said, nope, can't do that. And you maintained a line of integrity, which eventually pays off. But, you know, for some people, they may never have gotten that chance again. I think it speaks to your talent. And probably so does Bill, west of the Rockies, who worked on Babylon 5. Is that right, Bill?
Actually, I was a contractor for a company called Neotech, and we had done some stuff for you before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the guy that came in and installed the extra cooling fans in the main console up on the bridge of the Babylon station because Claudia Christian kept burning her fingers on the little touch sensors. A lot of people don't know that some of those touch sensors were active so that the actors could trigger effects themselves on the console. And I wanted to know, Michael, why you guys were working in that warehouse over in the cul-de-sac over in Sun Valley and not on the Warner Brothers lot. How did you come to be there in that brick warehouse?
Great question.
We wanted to be as far from Warner Brothers as humanly possible. We didn't want them coming in, seeing what we were doing, giving notes. Like, they had to get in their cars, drive 20 minutes, get to the stage, give us a note. No, they'd rather stay in their office. So we were far enough away to be awkward, but close enough that, you know, we weren't entirely forgotten. So, and we needed a lot of room for those stages. So we took over a building, we renovated it, make it into stages, and kept us far enough away from Warner Brothers that they would forget about us, which is exactly the best thing that could ever happen to us.
Excellent. I hope that people will go online, coasttocoastam.com, and click on to tonight's guest and pick up a copy of Becoming Superman. Read it, listen to it, whichever form that is, and hear the amazing story. And the, again, how we benefit from people like you and other guests who come on, and they're so willing to expose the parts of their life which other people might still be building walls around. And it's your way of not just sharing what happened to you in a healthy way, but it's very instructive. And I think the book is a great example for people to be able to recover from things that have happened to them and to stay forward and moving toward hope. So if you don't mind, I'll ask you, what of all of the things that you write about in the book and all the things we know you for, do you have a personal favorite?
The ending, which basically points out that, I mean, look, the reality is I'm a goofball. I am a nerd. I have no discernible personality. I have a face only Homeland Security could love. But, you know, if I can do this, anybody can do this. Anybody who has a dream or a passion that they want to follow, get out of your own way. Pursue that. Take chances. Be willing to run and fall and get up again and laugh and fall and do it again. And put yourself at risk and take chances. Live a full life. Live your life flat out. And God knows, seriously, if I can do this, that anybody can do it. That's probably the most important message that the book has to convey.
I feel a little bit closer to becoming Superman myself. Thank you so much, Joe. It was really a pleasure. I hope it was as fun for you as it was for me. Time flew by. I wish we could have gotten everybody on. And as we move forward this weekend with more tragic news, let's try to be the solution, right? Let's look for those opportunities to spread good over evil wherever possible. And Deus te amat, I do too.